Welcome to another episode of the Geek Legacy Lounge. My name is Steven, and today's guest is the official voice of table tennis, Adam Bobro. Adam was part of a global competition competing against thousands of other potential commentators and emerged as the champion, thus giving him the title of official voice of table tennis. Adam also has spent a lot of time as a voice actor in video games such as Lightning Returns, Final Fantasy XIII, Skylanders Giants, Marvel Ultimate Alliance 2, and the Saints Row franchise. Adam speaks about his table tennis experiences, how the sport is expanding, and why you should always watch a YouTube video until the very end. Trust me, it makes sense, and it's part of my embarrassment and my shame. There was an unfortunate technical difficulty which prevents the first part of the recording from actually airing. I had basically just asked Adam how he got involved in the competition to become the recognized voice of table tennis, and he is just in the middle of answering that question. In the Geek Legacy Lounge, here is Adam Bobro.
The 10-minute game in a big professional match, and did the commentary on it, did the play-by-play, and tried to make it exciting and informative for viewers of all experience levels. And then I asked a trusty friend of mine, this was two nights before it was due, I said, hey, I know it was sort of last minute, but if you could give it a listen and give me any feedback, I'd love it. And if not, if you don't have time, I understand, but I'd still appreciate your feedback whenever you do have time, even if it's after the due date. Well, that friend of mine, who's got incredibly sound advice and is always happy to help, wrote back, sorry, I'm really busy, here are just a few quick notes, and then gave me 9 specific constructive criticisms on how I could fix those issues. So even though I had stayed up till 7:30 in the morning the night before, I thought, man, how can I ignore this information? I have to stay up all night again and re-record because this is great advice. So I re-recorded, stayed up till 8:30 in the morning the next morning, and submitted my audition. And then I was in Costa Rica on a family vacation when I found out that I made it to the final 3. And once you're in the final 3, it was going to be a question of popular vote. So I just needed to promote it as well as I could and used whatever pull I had or any presence I had on social media and the internet and just blasted it out and said, you know, thanks for your support. If you can check out these final 3 and vote for your favorite, you know, I wrote that in the places where maybe one of the other 2 people was sharing with me. For example, one of the final 3 was from the U.S. and one was from England. So it was myself, another player from the U.S. named Barbara Way, and a player from England named David Witherell. And yeah, I hustled and then found out a handful of days later that they were sending me to Japan for an all-expenses-paid trip and a chance to commentate the World Championships. So that's how I got to Japan. Was that the question?
Yes, that was it. And on behalf of everybody in America, thank you for bringing it home.
Yeah, my pleasure. It was really exciting. And on behalf of everyone in America who voted, thank you for your support.
So now, you were commentating on previously done matches, or you were doing live matches as part of the audition process?
Oh, the audition process was a previously played match. They picked a match that I think they thought was pretty juicy and would give people a lot to talk about, so it wasn't just a boring, you know, something that might be really give people a chance to show what they can do.
Right.
And then when I got there, that was a different story. It was only live matches. There was no recording. Everything was on the fly. And actually, I got into Japan late at night on a Tuesday night, and they were so busy. I was expecting to have someone explain how things worked and sort of show me the ropes and tell me how to get to the venue the next day and what was going to be happening in the earpiece. And they were really busy and said, oh, just, you know, show up tomorrow morning, and if you can get there a little early, we'll chat with you. Well, I ended up doing the first match the next morning and just sort of was, you know, thrown into the fire, and it worked out really well. It was a very natural fit. The team was easy to work with. The other commentators were very experienced, conversational, tons of fun. So, yeah, it was no problem. It went really well.
Yeah, that's always kind of the best way with stuff like this. Broadcast, you know, TV, audio, anything. Just, you have to actually do it. You know, you can sit there, go over notes, right. You can study all this stuff, but until you actually do it, then you kind of get more comfortable and kind of understand, okay, this is what all this terminology means or how it works and stuff like that.
Exactly.
So, okay, how did you get involved with doing commentating for table tennis? Because that's not exactly something I can take in college, per se. How did you get How did you get involved with this?
That's a great question. I sort of fell into it. I've been an actor and a voice actor for some time now and made my living doing both. And I've been playing table tennis just as something that I genuinely love and I'm excited to be involved in for... I've been competing for 18 years, and about 3 years ago, and I've also been announcing, so anything that involves a microphone and communicating with other people and trying to engage a crowd, you know, has sort of come to me. So, yeah, at the Collegiate Nationals, I was volunteering, and they asked if I wanted to do commentary, and I thought, make it exciting and fun for the listeners, do something with my enthusiasm, and I'm very genuinely enthusiastic about it, so it doesn't take, you know, I'm not really putting on an interest. I'm just so interested in it that I can share it. The Collegiate Nationals, my first time was, I guess, it was a lot of fun, and there were some pros and things went really well, and as any first time goes, I think there were a lot of things to learn from it and ways I could grow. And then they asked me to do it again in the future, and other opportunities came up where people just thought, Adam Bobrow could make this exciting or add something to it. And then there was a guy who used to tell me he would give me his notes and his feedback. And at first I would be defensive. I would think, well, what if people like it when I do this? And I realized after a while that he's not doing it to tell me, hey, Adam, I'm right and you're wrong. Listen to me. I'm the more important person here. He's simply saying, this is what I think would make it better for everybody, for you, for me, for listeners. It's just, he's trying to help. And when I realized that, I just kept my mouth shut and listened every time he gave me notes and took it all in and tried to apply it. And after that, suddenly I realized I was doing a better job and all his advice was incredibly sound. So after a little while, I actually would come to him and say, hey, any feedback, any thoughts? And, yeah, that sort of helped me grow in commentary. And then, once I won the Voice of Table Tennis competition, actually, I didn't mention, but I had applied 3 years before when I was really fresh to the scene. And I think just made it a little bit too, I guess it wasn't as professional my first audition. I tried to throw in a lot more humor. And while the younger crowd who were on the panel deciding liked it, I think some of the older blood felt that it wasn't really appropriate, that it should really keep the focus on the athletes, and I completely agree. So, I guess that's how I fell into it.
And that's a really great mentality of taking the notes as suggestions as opposed to recommendations, I guess you can say. Because that's one thing that a lot of people do is, they say, hey, how did I do? You give them offers as far as how to make it better. And like you said, some people might take it a little too defensively, whereas you took it as, okay, these are from what other people are listening to from an outside perspective. So, that's a great thing. And I'm really glad you brought that up for anyone who's aspiring to be some type of broadcaster.
Thanks. Well, the funny thing is, whether it's broadcasting or any other area in my life or anyone's life, I think pride is a very easy thing to get in the way of all sorts of progress.
Very true.
Anytime I realize that someone's just trying to help, even if it's not necessarily helpful, if their intention is to help and it's not hurting, I just have to remember their intention and take it in stride and take what I can from it. Because sometimes there's some real diamonds in the rough or, solid advice or feedback that comes from, as far as feedback goes, on the internet, I get people that, in general, like in Japan, I had a really positive experience and a lot of positive feedback. But there are still going to be people out there who just don't like me or don't like what I did. Or, there's always someone with a bone to pick or some anger who just really wants to say something mean. And even in reading that, I can't take it all to heart. But sometimes there's a little bit of truth to what's being said, and I can take it as a way to just keep in mind what it sounds like to other people. So I don't have to take in everything, but I do my best to see how I can improve from what I hear from others.
Now, you're obviously a big ping pong player yourself. You're really into the sport. Do you find it easier just to be able to come up with things on the fly, or do you prefer to have a script in front of you, or do you just feel like it's too constricting?
I really like pretty much everything on the fly. I'm in acting. I was a big fan of improv. In stand-up comedy, it seemed like whenever someone heckled or anything came up that was on the fly, it almost always went over better than rehearsed, outside of a few jokes that, you know, always hit hard. So with commentary, and also emceeing, I don't know, I just feel like being present in the moment, you get a more genuine, spontaneous reaction. And that's, I mean, if reality TV were more just actual reality, it'd be, and it's part of the reason that reality TV was interesting for so long and has been, is because you get a lot of genuine reactions and responses that would be really tough, even for a lot of strong actors to really recreate. So for me, I like the spontaneity. I like that it's off the cuff, and it gives me a chance to really be in the moment, to be involved and giving very solid emotions. And if I stumble when I speak, I can correct it. If I feel like it's not worth it, I can let it go. But either way, you're getting a very genuine set of reactions, thoughts, and the observations. For me, I mean, because I've been playing table tennis for so long and very interested in the sport and the details of it, it really forces me to find the details that I find interesting or insightful, so that I'm not just commenting. Like, if I just tell someone what the score is or what exactly what they just saw happen, they don't really need that because the score is on the screen and they saw the replay or they saw the play itself.
Right.
But if I can offer some insight as to why the point went the way it did or where it turned, or maybe something that the viewers might not have noticed happened early in the point to set up such an advantage for one of the players, then suddenly I'm offering something to the viewers that's more than just a vision of what happened, a little bit of insight. And I like that. I find it challenging. I find it exciting. And, I'm definitely happier. I don't know. I mean, I can work with a script if I need to, but I love the freedom and the spontaneity of no script.
And the reason I bring that up is because you've obviously done a lot in both fields. You've been in a couple of movies. You've done some voice acting, like you said, for a couple of video games. The Saints Row franchise, one of my favorites, by the way. And I was just curious because you're on both sides of the spectrum. And, you know, do you try to find that middle ground? But you obviously already kind of hinted at that being giving that freedom is just much more liberating, I guess you can say, and just being able to, you know, express it in your own way to the viewers out there.
Yeah. I also find that, you know, having directed a bit, sometimes when you give people freedom, it shows them trust, you know, that you trust them. And it also creates a lot juicier moments because you really get people at their best. I know a lot of my favorite comedic movies, you know, seeing Jim Carrey just go, and then you hear the stories later from the directors that, you know, they just sort of said, go, just be you, do what you do. And then he produced Gold. And I feel like it really does give a whole bunch of creative freedom and, I don't know, just sort of loosens people up. And I feel like when we're loose, when we're happy, we produce our best in almost everything. It's very rare that if we feel nervous or if we feel restricted or censored in any way, we just don't give quite the performance. So I forgot if that was your question.
No, you came around to it. You got it. Out of curiosity, out of a script that Jim Carrey gets, how much of it do you think he improvises?
Well, I guess it depends on every film. If I had to guess, I mean, something like Liar Liar, for example, probably more than lots of other films, although in the comedic pieces, definitely more than any. How much? That's a great question. I think in a lot of the courtroom scenes where he's flipping out, or like the pen, I don't know if you remember the pen is red, the scene where he kept trying to say that it's red and it's a blue pen.
Right,
I would guess that there was a lot of improv involved in that scene, and I could be wrong. I'm you know, I wasn't involved in the film and didn't watch special features, but yeah, I would guess that scenes like that had a lot of improv, and they just sort of let him go for minutes and said, here's generally what we want from you. We want to see a fight between you and a pen. Make it awesome.
And I brought it up because you had mentioned it, and you know, in my mind, he's one of those guys where when I watch a movie with him in it, it's like, okay, there's no way that was written in the script because of the way he delivered it. Who are some of those actors, some of those personas that you really try to, not necessarily, you know, clone yourself off of, but really pull from as far as, you know, little mentalities, little quirks and mannerisms from?
Well, I'm pretty open to learning from anybody. So whether that means, I mean, I'm drawn to comedy. I really appreciate comedy. And I don't know, I mean, Sacha Baron Cohen is one of my favorites from the Ali G show, all three characters that he played there. And I really enjoyed Jim Carrey. I know his prime time through the 90s and early 2000s was really his biggest, but he, you know, when he did Yes Man, it was a really cool flashback to the classic Jim Carrey, and I thought that movie sent a great message. It was quite a powerful film, even for people who were already sort of seize the day types for Yes Men, because I've always been that type of guy. I mean, who's very interested in taking new opportunities. But after that movie, I felt like even more of one. I was like, yeah, why not just try out more stuff and just go with the flow of a lot of things. So, yeah, I really like Jim Carrey. I mean, Robin Williams has always done some amazing stuff. Chris Rock is a stand-up comedian, I think is incredible. I don't know, there are a lot of people, most of the cast of In Living Color I find really funny and always have. Let's see, a big Ricky Gervais fan. I don't know. Those are mostly comedians. They're actors. I mean, Daniel Day-Lewis blows my mind, just completely loses himself in character.
So fantastic.
Oh, just amazing. Let's see. I don't know. I mean, anyone I can learn anything from, whether it's watching a performer on the street engage a crowd. There was this 9-year-old girl at Disneyland who goes by Goldilocks, who's a B-girl. She's a breakdancer. And a popper and locker, and the way she commanded the crowd, like she just really engaged everybody in the crowd, from adults to little kids. Now this moment I will never forget because it was so amazing. This 9-year-old B-girl with flowing, curly, beautiful blonde hair was just dancing in the middle of a large circle in California Adventure, and I ended up battling her later just because I thought it'd be fun, and she was clearly, like, looking to get the crowd involved, and, you know, I'm a grown man who dresses like a little girl, and she was a little girl who dressed like a little girl who was a B-girl, and so it was a nice pairing, but she was sort of running around in the circle, and everyone just wanted to see her, and sometimes people are shy to get involved. She did this motion that was very unusual and almost like hypnotic to the crowd, and just sort of like waved her hand and then turned her hand over and did that sort of come here move. Like I guess if it were Mortal Kombat, it would have been Scorpion going like, get over here.
Very good.
And she was like, yeah, she just did that motion, and a little girl, even littler girl, who must have been 6 or 7 years old and was dressed up in a princess, like Cinderella dress, just came out of the crowd. But she looked like she was pulled by, like, it was like there were strings attached to her shoulders. She just walked out of the crowd into the circle, and she looked completely hypnotized. Like, she had no idea what was happening, but suddenly she was standing in the middle of a giant circle with Goldilocks. And then Goldilocks did a dance move and then passed it off to the princess, who then did a spin move and started dancing as well. And she looked like she was completely under a spell. And I have video of it. I shared it because I thought it was the most amazing thing. But I realized the body language of Goldilocks was just very important to, like, how she was received by the crowd and how people trusted her, how people were engaged by her, her confidence. So I took something from that 9-year-old B-girl. As a performer, I feel like there's, and as a person, I just feel like there's stuff to be learned everywhere. And anything I can take, even from performances that are not my favorite, to say the least, there are things that I can observe and learn from. So, yeah, in the acting world, in the comedy world, MCs at weddings and other things, which something else that I do, I just try to take whatever I can, wherever I find it, whatever seems useful, you know?
So you MC, you host, you commentate, you're the official voice of table tennis, you stand up comedy. What don't you do at this point? I mean, are you just trying to do so many different things just to build up the resume and say, hey, I've done all these different, you know, aspects in my career, or where do you stop?
That's a great question. Resumes are a funny thing. I don't really think about them that often. I'm not trying to build a resume. I don't know exactly what I would build a resume for. I mean, I have in each individual area, like in stand-up comedy, there were times I'm like, well, I think I've hit most of the big spots in LA and Hollywood. And then I'd think, oh, you know what? I haven't played here. And then I'd see if I could get a gig over there. But for the most part, I'm not really thinking about resume. I just sort of do whatever interests me. And like commentary, I really fell into that. I wasn't pursuing it so much. I mean, yes, I auditioned for that. It sounded like a fun opportunity and a good way to get it. And that's another thing. I really wanted to go to Japan. I haven't been to Japan since 2005. And was just like, you know what? I'm a single guy. I think I can enjoy it more that way. And I'd like to go back whenever I get a chance, and then found a way to get a all expenses paid trip. But yeah, that just sort of seemed like something fun to do. And then also, I'm sort of a scrappy guy, and maybe from a focus standpoint, it would behoove me to focus more on one specific thing and really just go, but I really enjoy variety in my life. I don't like to fall too much into a complete cycle. I like there to be some spontaneity and not knowing exactly what's coming next, or having a different day every day and a different week every week. So if that means sometimes doing the voice of an animated, you know, character, if that means sometimes emceeing a wedding, if that means going to Hong Kong to do an exhibition playing table tennis, or yeah, lessons at a company, or coaching at a school, or whatever the case may be, I definitely want to make sure that I'm saving for the future / eating and able to pay my bills without any stress. But at the same time, yeah, getting to do a lot of different things that I love.
Yeah, and so, you're... No, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say that from a focus standpoint, lately, you know, my PR team has been working with me on a lot of things, and focusing on table tennis, I do it anyway. Even when acting and voice acting was my main source of income, I was still playing table tennis about 4 to 5 days a week just because I love it. And, you know, I volunteer a lot of time. Like, I run a nonprofit organization that's a table tennis teams league in LA, and that doesn't make me any money. It actually costs me a little bit because I drive all over the place and don't get reimbursed for that. And I put in, you know, hours and hours, and yeah, but I think it's an important thing. So I've continued to do it. And I don't know. I just feel like table tennis has really been an outstanding opportunity and created a lot of opportunities for me. So, and since there are so many actors in LA, I mean, you can't go to the doctor's office without meeting someone working there who's also an actor.
True.
It's like, if I meet someone and they say, what do you do? And I tell them I'm an actor, it's almost like, oh, sorry, our windshield doesn't need to be washed right now, or we can't help you, we wish we could, thanks. You immediately feel like a beggar. And even just saying voice actor, if I told someone I was a voice actor, which comes up plenty, that to them is very interesting. They want to talk to that person and know more about it because they're unfamiliar with it. And then telling someone that you're a professional table tennis entertainer, or a pro ping pong entertainer, that to them, they're like, what did you just say? Wait a minute. And it's like, they'll almost stop anything they're doing just to find out what you meant by that, what that is. And then from there, yeah, I mean, when people are interested in one, you, but two, your story. If they find out that I'm also an actor, and that, you know, I do voice acting, great. It doesn't have to be, like, I'm not hiding it per se, but it's definitely of greater interest to them to hear something that they can learn about or were really unfamiliar with or very curious about. So, yeah, table tennis has been a big factor in almost everything that I do recently, and I'm actually pitching a TV show that's involving table tennis. So if that goes well, and so far it has, I'm sort of looking at different contracts and trying to sort out what the best option is for the show. But yeah, if that goes really well, it could do some pretty exciting stuff to promote table tennis and also help me be, maybe have some decent exposure and able to accomplish my goals and positive influences on a grander stage.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, it's when you say that you're as you so eloquently put it, a professional ping pong entertainer, that's not a phrase that is normally heard on a regular basis. So it strikes a chord in the brain saying, okay, wait, what did you just say? What were you talking about? And I think a lot of people can kind of see what you're talking about. There's a couple of videos that are already online. We've got Excessive Ping Pong Celebration. We've got Gangnam Style Ping Pong and Epic Ping Pong Point. I mean, do you ever point people to those videos and say, yeah, that's me? Or do people ever recognize you for those videos at all?
Yes to both. Less so. I definitely point people to them more. I think the Excessive Ping Pong Celebration was definitely the biggest hit that I've made. It got around more than any of my other videos and from different websites and different TV shows and all around the world. That video single-handedly changed my life. Like, it's given me an opportunity to really, oh yeah. I mean, after that, it kept getting shut down, actually. Like, Failblog posted it, and it got 2.7 million views in, I think, its first month and a half. And then, which for me is something I'd never experienced. I know it's no Susan Boyle, or Gangnam Style, but for me, that's still pretty exciting. After that got shut down, it got put up on the front page of Yahoo, and it's all different than my uploads. So there were several, you know, the front page of dig.com and all sorts of websites. And then it got on Good Morning America. It got on HBO, it got on Fox, it got on KTLA, it got all sorts of different stations, and then other countries started playing it. It won an award in Japan on TV, which is sort of funny. But because my face is not important to the video, it's more, you know, you can see what my body is doing in it, but my face could be anything. So people have to either have subscribed to my channel on YouTube, watched other videos, or be involved in the table tennis world in some way, usually, to recognize me walking around. It hasn't changed my life in that sense. I only get recognized usually in table tennis settings, unless I've just done something. Like, I was in Vietnam earlier in the year, and a family stopped me on the street. A kid recognized me from TV in Vietnam and came over and talked to me. So that was cool.
Wow.
But walking, you know, going to the market here, I don't have to put on a disguise or tint my windows or it hasn't come to that yet. And as far as pointing people to those videos, yeah, that's as far as resume goes, this is sort of like my portfolio. And I don't think of it so formally, like I have to have a portfolio or this, you know, I'm not sharing my resume with people. But if I want to get table tennis into schools, which I absolutely do, and I want to meet with a principal or I want to meet with an athletic director, I'll write an email. And at the end of it, I'll say, just to give you an idea of my passion for the sport, here's a fun, you know, or a silly 1 minute video that I made. So they know they're not going to have to put in too much time. And if they watch it, usually I get a response. So it just sort of helps me be more effective in my goals. And also, one thing I've learned from acting to everything else, it's like no one wants to hear how good you think you are. They want to see what you can do. They want to know for themselves. No one wants to go out on a limb and just take you on your word. So for me, in anything I do, if I want to do it, I have to show somebody that I can, and to sort of not leave it up to their imagination, make them very secure in their choice to choose me. So, yeah, having that video, I can just say, hey, look, here's what I can do. Watch this. And then that's the way to go for me.
I remember seeing this video years ago on G4 TV. They used to do like a little internet roundup, you know, five of the best videos that they've seen on YouTube or, you know, some aggregate like Dig or some other website. And I remember seeing this and just thinking, okay, that's, you know, that's definitely entertaining. I'll give it that. And then I see there's more to go with it. I mean, your passion is obviously a lot more than just playing the game, because obviously, like you said, you're the voice of essentially this sport. You're trying to teach kids and kind of, you know, spread it amongst the LA area. Talk to me a little bit more about that nonprofit you mentioned earlier, and just what are you trying to do with that?
Sure. And do you care? I just wanted to ask you a quick question that came up in the middle of your question.
Yeah.
In the excessive ping pong celebration, did you catch the score at the end?
Did I catch the score? No, I wasn't really paying attention to the score, unfortunately.
Right. Okay. There's something that I just have to touch on. We'll come back to the nonprofit organization in a second, because I definitely think that's an important thing to talk about.
Absolutely. Let's hear it.
Your tone of voice when you were describing your reaction to the video made me sense that maybe you didn't catch the punchline at the end. For those who haven't seen it, I guess, which is still the majority, I would encourage them to watch it and tune out now for any spoilers, or if you like spoilers. Most people watch the point and they're like, what a dude.
Oh my
like,
God.
This guy, he's just dancing. He's in the other guy's face so much. And then the end of the video reveals that the score was actually 1-10, and I was trailing 0-10 before that point.
And now I'm seeing it, and I have never... Every single version of this, I never got that far. I it's always cut off right around when you're circling around the table. That is unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, right after the headbutt, which is like the pinnacle of just being absurd, and I don't actually headbutt him, obviously. I didn't harm my opponent. Then is the punchline that I was losing badly, which gives some justification for this behavior. Otherwise, yeah, I could hear in your tone of voice, I'm like, if I was watching that and the score, if I won the match, I'd be like, what a jerk. This guy's just completely deserves nothing good in life. But with the score at that, at the end, hopefully it offers some humor and maybe shows a guy who's making the best of a bad situation or just sort of having fun. I realized, because I would have news channels calling and saying, can we use your video where you win the match? And I'm like, you can use my video, but just so you know, that's not what happens here. I won a point. And so I realized that maybe every other person either wasn't familiar with seeing a scoreboard in table tennis, or just wasn't translating that. So I literally wrote it on the screen in an annotation. And then... when people realize that, it seems to make it much more easy to swallow, or really, that's the biggest laugh moment for almost everybody who watches it, so I didn't want it to go unseen.
Like I said, I mean, it's only a 1:10, and somehow I have yet to see the last 5 seconds of this video. I don't know where that mistranslation came from.
Yeah, I think a lot of people think it's over when the dancing stops, because it's like, oh, okay, cool. That was that, and then walking back to the table doesn't. It's like leaving a movie theater before that last little bit that pops up after the credits. A lot of people. I mean, if you weren't raised in LA, sometimes you don't stay for the credits. You just sort of like, oh, well, the movie's over, time to go. So I get it. That's, you know, maybe I should add another annotation saying, "Don't leave. Wait, there's more."
Yeah. Wait for it. Yeah. Tease it.
Exactly. Right. To answer your question about the nonprofit organization,
yes.
As a table tennis player, you know, like everyone else, I started off as a beginner, and in the United States, most people never really find competitive play. They just play on the driveway or in their basement or in a bar or at the office or on a cruise. And if you ask them you know, do they play table tennis? They might say, is that the same thing as ping pong? To which I would answer yes, basically. And if I said, have you ever played in a tournament? They'd be like, there are tournaments? What do you mean? Or if I told them that, you know, there's equipment, there's professional table tennis equipment, they would be like, really? Are you serious? They just, most people aren't exposed to it as a sport, not in the U.S. anyway. And I grew up playing baseball, basketball, and soccer, and then, you know, played ping pong on the driveway with my dad. My dad was the best player I had ever seen in my life, until I met people who really played. And then since then I've met many women in their 60s who would have destroyed my dad if he were still alive and playing today. And it's just, there's a huge drop off between recreational play and competitive play. So I think I want to bridge that gap. I really want to, like, if I didn't have a dad who was involved in athletics and, you know, knew how to get me involved in table tennis, I never would have had an opportunity to really take it to the next level or learn how to play competitively. So I want to make that information more public. There are people all over the country, boys and girls, men and women, all ages, that really enjoy playing and either think they're the best there is or actually are the best amongst their friends. And they beat their friends and family consistently, and they just ran out of challenges. They give up because it's no fun for them anymore. Those people have not actually run out of challenges. They just don't know where to look. And you shouldn't have to look so hard. I mean, it really takes a dedicated person to go look up on the internet. I mean, not quite now, but when I was starting out, it wasn't quite so easy to find table tennis facilities. So yeah, I want it to be really easy for people to find table tennis lessons, table tennis competitions, equipment, just to know, to be exposed to the opportunity to play in a formal setting. And one thing that recreational players who get too good for their friends do is they find a club, they show up at that local club, and there are local table tennis clubs all over the world. And in the U.S., I mean, maybe in the middle of Wyoming, you're not going to find quite as densely packed amounts of table tennis clubs per space. But in Los Angeles, I mean, if you include the South Bay, there are over 60 different table tennis clubs, and I guarantee you there are well over 100 facilities that have tables. I mean, any YMCA has tables, lots of bars in downtown LA. I mean, Spin Standard has 11 tables. It's a table tennis night lounge, which is doing a great job of promoting the sport. But in general, someone who beats all their friends, shows up at a table tennis club, walks in, they're going to find women well into their 60s with back braces and cellulite dimples who started playing because their doctor recommended it to help their diabetes sort of subside.
That's very descriptive.
Right. And those women are going to destroy these people. Like some dude who might be the buffest, coolest guy in his frat house is going to show up and lose to that woman with the back brace. And a lot of these people, like that guy, might walk away discouraged and be like, yeah, forget this. You know what? I suck, or I thought it was something else. I'm done. And some people won't. Some people will take that experience and say, wow, I've got to learn whatever she knows because I'm sure I can be better than her if I practice. Or there's just so much to learn now. It might really open the eyes of some people. But even still, a lot of these beginners that show up or recreational players that show up at table tennis clubs feel like they're bothering the experienced players. And I understand, not everybody wants to be, most people don't want to be playing people significantly lower than them all the time. Mm-hmm. They'd like to have a challenge and they'd like to have some excitement in their play and not know exactly what the outcome is going to be. So, LATTF, which is lapingpong.com, that's the Los Angeles Table Tennis Federation, which can be seen at lapingpong.com, is a teams league where divisions are formed based on skill level. So we have entire divisions of people who've never played a tournament in their life. And in the top four divisions, for example, you know, the top division, we've got people who've been national champions of their respective countries. We've got people who've played the Olympics. We have all different levels of player. And then all the way down to, we have a youth division, which is typically very beginning players. The youth players, like, we've had 12-year-olds that are strong enough to play in the top division, but those players have ratings and don't usually play the youth division. The youth division is for kids that are in school and, you know, just learning to play or starting to take lessons out at their community center or at a local table tennis club, or, yeah, just interested in it. We've got a corporate division, because in office culture, I think one of the best things that I've seen is when companies put a ping pong table in their office, it's like suddenly there's something for people to do when they're stressed. It's really fun, distracts their mind completely from whatever's bothering them at work, allows them a fun social opportunity, and something that's good for their brain and sort of fun and exciting. So I've been to so many offices that have tables, and it seems like the rapport there, the morale of the employees is just like, they could stay at work till 6 or 7 and not feel like they're at work, because if they're free to go play in between, they will. And suddenly it's like they're on a cruise or they're in their home. They're in a luxury place. So, yeah, I just noticed that a lot of different offices have tables, especially on the west side, like the Silicon Valley, which is where all the tech startups are near Santa Monica.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're crazy about ping pong over there. So we think it's a really cool opportunity to get some more bonding going on with the office and make it something else that people can feel like they're a part of a family, as opposed to a wheel and a cog of a machine. Yeah, so we have all different skill levels, and in every division, people know that they're going to have challenging matches. That, yes, there's going to be a bottom team and a top team in every division, and a weakest player and a strongest player. But the distance between the weakest player and a strongest player in any division will not be nearly as great as if people just show up randomly, not part of any organization, to a club. And I encourage people to go to clubs, but I've just seen that happen so many times. I feel like that's the service that the teams league offers. And also, in an individual sport, it's really easy to stop showing up because you just don't feel like it, or for any reason you don't feel needed, you don't feel missed if you don't show up. And the truth is, if you don't show up, to most clubs, you're not going to get a phone call because there's no obligation to be there. But if you're part of a team, people are counting on you. And it's sort of like when things get busy, or if you struggle in any way, you have the support of the team and you're expected. And yeah, they're just social perks. So I feel like team sports, that's all I played growing up. And I think there's a big reason that kids get into team sports. Parents know that their kids are going to learn a lot, how to interact with people, how to compromise, how to be part of a team. You're going to make more friends. It's just better for every aspect. And in table tennis, as a team sport, I think it's definitely much more attractive and going to be much more beneficial. So, yeah, the teams league, we have 2 seasons a year, and it's very inexpensive compared to other sports. It's a fun opportunity. At the end of every season, we have an awards banquet where we present giant trophies that look like something you'd see given out after a hockey final championships.
Do you get the name engraved on the side like the Stanley Cup?
You know, we have the team names engraved, but since they are trophies that people actually take with them, they are a little bit, well, they're smaller than a Stanley Cup.
Ah, okay.
If we did have a perpetual trophy that stayed with the organization, we would just put plaques on every year.
Very good.
But yeah, they're big, heavy trophies that, you know, at parties people would drink out of and often either joke about or do. And then the medals are serious medals, but every player, the top 2 teams in every division, get medals and a trophy and gift certificates to our sponsor, Yola, which is a table tennis brand that is a top table tennis brand that's been sponsoring us for several seasons. And yeah, it just keeps people encouraged. And because there's a discount to continue once you start, people tend to come back and are excited to play. So yeah, that's why I feel this nonprofit organization is important. And now that we're working with schools, and yeah, we're just getting more and more calls and emails of interest from offices and from schools saying, yeah, we've got a lot of people interested. How do we get involved? So that's the story of LAPingPong.com and Los Angeles Table Tennis Federation.
Very good. Thank you very much for explaining all that. And I got to ask, you were talking about how the employees, they tend to, you know, play a couple of games in between their, you know, their work hours, anything like that. Do you just put in a foosball table in the middle just to screw with people? Just to see what the reaction would be?
In the middle of an office?
Just, yeah, everyone's got ping pong, you know, everyone's got ping pong on the mind, and that's what they would be playing. But do you ever just throw in a foosball table or an air hockey table just to see what the crowd would be like?
Well, I'm not usually so involved in the decision-making of what goes in there. I will say that there are offices that have air hockey and foosball. Probably foosball more commonly than air hockey just because it's a little smaller. And I don't know a ton about foosball. I used to play it for fun here and there growing up. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure that's popular in offices too.
And the only reason, I know it's kind of random, but the only reason I brought it up is because I, you know, with this Los Angeles Table Tennis Federation that you're preaching over here, I was wondering if, you know, other table sports are kind of in the same boat or if they're kind of more individualized, if that makes sense.
Well, I think, and here's something, I used to take offense and I understand that there are people that play air hockey at a really serious level and have the passion for air hockey that I have for table tennis. And in foosball, there are people that are as passionate about it and more passionate than I am about table tennis. So I respect that there are a lot of details, work, and training that go into that that I don't know about and I'm not familiar with. But in the United States and maybe a handful of other countries, table tennis is thought of alongside air hockey and foosball, and they're not the same. They shouldn't be in the same category. And I don't say that to disrespect the efforts that go into air hockey and foosball players. Table tennis is an Olympic sport, has been since 1988. And one thing I'll tell you that I saw at the World Championships that really drove something that I think I already knew home was that these athletes are physically very fit. In the world top 100, it's rare to see anyone that is not very physically fit. And if you ever do, it's usually someone who's spent years being very physically fit and is still one of the strongest players in his country. And you can see it in his legs, even if he's not quite as sharp on the upper body as he used to be. Like arguably the greatest player in the history of table tennis, Jan Ove Waldner from Sweden. He's considered the Mozart of table tennis, the Michael Jordan of table tennis. He's in his late 40s now, and he likes to drink, so he's got a bit of a gut on him. And it's not hanging over his shorts. I mean, he doesn't look like a sloppy man. But compared to other pro table tennis players, yes, he's got a little bit of a belly. You know, he just looks like an average guy on the upper body. So he's much slower now. And could still probably compete with some guys just inside the top 100. But at the World Championships, I looked around, and even teams that were not in the top 8, they all have six packs, and they look like mannequins. You know, their upper bodies really fill out their shirts, and their quads are huge, and they look like soccer players. And the stamina is just incredible, and they're training physically every day of the week. I mean, you know, most of these people, it is their profession. Like we have baseball players that they're on the road however many days a year, and every weekend they're playing, and they've got practice in between, and during the off season they're training hard. That's what table tennis players are like in other countries. That's their full-time job, is they wake up in the morning and they physically train and condition. And then after lunch, they come back and they do drills, whether it's for footwork or for touch. They're playing, and then they break for a meal, and then they play again, and then they rest. And they can't eat certain things, and they can't drink excessively, and they don't smoke. And in some countries, they do both, you know. But the majority of these players get to sleep at reasonable hours so they can wake up and be on top of their game and physically condition. So as far as the office culture, yeah, foosball will absolutely make people happy and be fun and be a way to keep people excited about being at work. It'll give them something to do. And for people who aren't if companies don't have a coach, which a lot of companies don't, table tennis will just be played however people are used to playing it. And then maybe over time, if they really want to get competitive, they'll learn new tricks and they'll try to, maybe they'll go up on YouTube and research how to serve or proper equipment or how to spin the ball, just different ways to fool their opponents or get easy points. But if they have a coach, it'll be like, for example, I coach at offices, and when I do that, you can see the ears perk up and everybody gets really fascinated, because what I've learned over 18 years of competing is not going to come to people that don't show up at tournaments and just play in their office every once in a while, or even every day if they're not really, you know, they haven't been playing. If I'd been playing 18 years in an office, I guarantee you I would not be where I am today, unless I had a coach. If it weren't for my exposure to the sport, I never would have learned a lot of these things. So I try to get people excited about it by showing them the difference between professional equipment, competitive play, and recreational equipment and play, and that there are really cool ways to get excited about the sport. And when people learn about spin, and they learn about all these things, it's like their mind is blown. They just didn't even realize it was physically possible to make a ball curve this way. Or that you can, like, I'll do a trick where I'll tell everyone in the room, I'll say to the person on the other side of the table, cover your ears for just a second, earmuff it. And then I'll tell everyone in the room, first serve is going to my right, second serve is going to my left, third serve is going into the net, assuming he makes contact with these shots. And then I'll say, okay, uncover your ears. I'll say, just do your best to return the ball. And then I'll hit three serves in a row, and they'll go where I said it was going to. And people will go crazy, and they'll think I'm a magician, and I'm not. I mean, any table tennis player who plays tournaments, for the most part, should be able to do this trick on people. And it's just sort of common knowledge about how physics works and how spin works. I know I have a lot to learn about foosball and air hockey, but to answer your question, I think they probably go over well in an office, but I genuinely believe that for longevity, as far as things that exercise your brain, can be physically exhausting if you learn to play competitively, and it can be played from, I've heard people starting to play at 3, all the way through. There was a woman who played until she was 102 recently, from Australia, I believe. So it's a lifelong sport. I got beaten by a 75-year-old at the U.S. Nationals, and I think that in schools and in office culture, table tennis is an outstanding investment.
I'm really glad you brought that up, because now I will never make that mistake again, combining the three of them. I'm really glad you were able to differentiate exactly why, because, you know, most people, they'll give their reasons as to why they think this isn't a sport or that isn't, you know, whatever it is. But I'm really glad you brought up the different physical activities that table tennis players go through that a lot of people don't realize on a regular basis. And you are absolutely right. Table tennis players, they, you know, from the waist up, they might not look like much, but below that, I mean, the legs, and these guys are built like horses in many cases.
And even, you know, at the world-class level, and I think it's partially because, like, you know how you never see a pitcher in baseball who's completely ripped and bulky?
Right.
It's if they're too tight on the upper body, they're not going to, those are the guys that, you know, maybe play third base or play first base or sometimes catcher. And granted, a catcher's got to be able to gun it down to second base to throw somebody out. but in table tennis, if your upper body's too bulky, you're not going to have the snap or the speed or the looseness you need to really to be fast. There is a player who's a male bodybuilder who's really bulky in New York, and he's better than I am, I think. But he's not a contender for the national team. Nobody looks like him at the world-class level for that reason. But I will say, the Chinese national team, I had an opportunity to play with world number 2 in Japan, just to joke around. I offer this man no challenge, not even close. But he looked like Bruce Lee when he took his shirt off. He had the clearest defined six-pack and bulging pecs. and it's just, that's the level of fitness that most table tennis players of the world-class level, even upper body. I mean, they're conditioning everything. They're just not trying to bulk up. But yeah, as far as a sport, I can't be upset at anybody for asking questions out of curiosity. Their intention isn't to slam a sport or insult. I just understand that in the United States, people aren't exposed to table tennis as a sport. I mean, the ping pong balls are next to the beer cups in the grocery store. I get it.
Very true. And they're not even called ping pong balls. Yeah. They're called beer pong balls in
right.
many cases.
And that's beer pong is more common. We talked about, like, if I say ping pong, a lot of people are like beer pong. And if I say table tennis, people sometimes say like ping pong. But yeah, that's part of the reason I'm trying to promote it, is because I think it's a wonderful sport. It's just, as a guy who's, you know, spent his years playing many sports, I really think sports are outstanding. I think they're great for mental strength. I think they're great for psychological, which is similar, I guess, and I think they're healthy for people. If you have a habit that involves physical activity, you're going to find yourself more motivated in other areas of your life. You're going to find yourself physically healthy and, you know, fit. And well, it's just sort of exciting to have a physical challenge put to a game. It's the beauty of sport. It's mentally stimulating and physically. And table tennis, I will admit, you can get pretty good without being in great shape. There's a guy who's 350 pounds who plays regularly with me at Spin in a tournament that I run. And he's not the top of the group, but everyone who watches is blown away at how strong he is. And you can be very good if you understand spin and, you know, placement and other things about the sport with time and practice. So it's a very equalizing sport. So while I do talk about at the world-class level, everybody is so physically fit, the sport is for everybody, boys and girls. I'm teaching at a middle school right now, and the girls are playing. I think one of the best athletes I have, one of the best players, is a girl, and she's beating lots of guys. And I've been beaten to a pulp by many women, and even little girls. I mean, I got beaten by a 14-year-old girl recently, and that's partially because I'm not a world-class player, but the fact is she is a contender for the cadet team. She's just a better player than me. And wheelchair, standing, either way. I mean, there are outstanding players who play in wheelchairs, and I have a friend who's missing a leg. He lost a leg, and he's one of our Paralympic players. I have a friend who's a quadriplegic and can beat anybody you've ever met. I mean, he would destroy not only any recreational player, but half of the tournament players that show up on the scene. I mean, For anyone else who is not facing any physical conditions or restraints, he is just an outstanding player. So I think it's a great sport for everybody to be playing. It's just a question of learning that there is more to do with the sport. And, yeah, most people couldn't imagine it because they're not exposed to it. So, yeah, that's what I want to try to... If anyone out there watching, and it's easy to get this impression that, oh, the sport, yeah, that's only played by older Chinese guys. But it can be played by anybody, and it's huge in Europe. And there are beautiful girls playing. I mean, there are tall, blonde, athletic women playing in Europe that look like they could be in the Sports Illustrated swimsuit edition. And they're as sharp as can be, and they're training full-time. And they're playing, and they're young, good-looking guys and old, good-looking guys. All ethnicities around the world are competing. So for any kid here in America that thinks that sport's not for me, well, I'd like them to take a longer look at that. I'd like them to really look into it and say, oh, you know what? That guy looks like me, or that girl looks like me, or this sport looks cool, this sport looks fun, or I didn't realize you could do that. And I think that... I think it should be a really attractive sport for people to get into. It's just they need to see it more. And yeah, so I'm trying to help expose the sport that way and get it out to people.
So you talked about lapingpong.com, where people can go for more information in regards to joining a team, just getting some information on where they can play locally. A little bit about yourself, adambobro.com, social media, you know, anything else that you want to plug in out there?
Sure, yeah. AdamBobrow.com will send people to a few of my videos. I have a YouTube channel under Adam Bobrow, which is B-O-B-R-O-W. And, yeah, a lot of videos up there. I'm on Facebook. I'm very active. If you type in Adam Bobrow, you should find me. My profile picture used to be a picture of me in Vietnam with my foot over my head doing a karate kick in the middle of a major tournament. Now it's me with world rank number one, Xu Qin from China. And yeah, I'm actively updating my Facebook. I've got a Twitter. I've got an Instagram, both of which are under Adam Bobrow, or at Adam Bobrow. And yeah, I think those are the main ways for people to keep up. And at some point, I won't be able to respond to everybody, but so far, I've been doing my best to answer any questions through, you know, LAPingPong.com, wherever, anything I can do to help. I would love to help get people involved in table tennis. And if people don't need my actual help, they just want to see some silly videos or hopefully be entertained for a little bit between YouTube and my website, they should have a few things to keep them busy for a bit. So, yeah.
Adam, I want to thank you very much for taking your time to come on the show and explain not only your passion, but just the overall growing of table tennis and what you hope to accomplish with it. Thank you very much. And, you know, just keep on doing your thing. Do we have any aspirations to do 2016 Olympics by any chance, since you are the official voice of table tennis?
Oh, as a commentator, that's a possibility.
All right.
I'm very interested in that. As a player, there's no chance for me. and I say that just being like, I'm an optimist and a realist, I think. I try to be. But the people that make the Olympics in the U.S., and we're not the highest on the totem pole or in the food chain of table tennis, those people are people that have made it a full-time thing and train. You know, they train 20 hours on weekdays and another 20 on the weekend, and they have coaches full time, and they really have been training with this ambition for years. I am not that person. I'm just a guy who loves to play, so I am not training hard. And I still, when I compete, I do the best I can to win, but I definitely like to keep it fun and creative. So, yeah, if you see me at the Olympics, it'll be because they turned a camera on a commentator possibly. But yeah, I'd love to be involved in any way I can to help add excitement to the sport. And I know you thanked me, but Steve, I really wanted to thank you for having me on. I really appreciate your questions. We're all clearly well researched and thought out, and yeah, really thank you for giving me and table tennis a chance to get some great exposure and hopefully perk up some ears out there and inspire some people to play.
Thank you for the kind words, and again, I appreciate your time here.
Pleasure, Steve.
I want to thank Adam for joining us here on the Geek Legacy Lounge. Be sure to follow him on Twitter, at Adam Bobrow. Find him on Facebook, YouTube, and on his own personal website, www.adambobrow.com. If you're interested in learning more about the Los Angeles Table Tennis Federation, be sure to go to lapingpong.com. That is all the time we have for you today. Thank you for tuning in. Stay fabulous and keep your controllers charged.